Good morning and welcome to our WAMC Roundtable panel. We have a lot of important issues to talk about this morning, and we always welcome you to join us. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Joining us for the panel this morning, WAMC's Alan Chartok, newsman Ray Graff, and our guest this morning, commentator and activist Libby Post. Good morning, Libby.
Good morning, Joe. Good morning, Alan. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning.
It's always good to have you here. Thank you very much for being with us. A busy week in the news weekend. You know, summer weekends aren't supposed to be this busy news-wise.
No.
By law, I believe. however, this was certainly a very busy weekend. And, of course, a lot of this had to do with the acquittal of George Zimmerman and the death of Trayvon Martin in Florida. It is a case, obviously, where the outcome reverberated from church pulpits to street protests across the country on Sunday, in a adding once again to the debate about race and crime and the American justice system and how it is handled in this country. And, well, I feel as though, since Libby is here, I'll start with her as to what you make of the verdict and how we deal with it.
Well, I think it's clear that race is still a very prominent issue in our country, and that you know, they weren't allowed to use the words racial profiling, from what I understand, during the case, and that's what George Zimmerman did. I mean, I don't think there's any question about it. And the verdict, you take this verdict and you take what the Supreme Court did with the Voting Rights Act, and it's clear that the concerns of the African-American community in this country is not paramount. And we need to deal with race. There's just no two ways about it. Our country is based on some heinous racial segregation. Some people would rather see it be that way in all kinds of ways, whether they say it or not. And
is that the alert that says the show is on?
Oh,
because,
okay.
You know,
maybe the show's
apologies.
Over.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
And I just think that the decision was a travesty. I really do.
Alan, what do you think?
Well, I pretty well subscribe to everything that Libby has just said, but that's not surprising. She was my student.
Never let anyone forget that.
No.
Never
in fact, you said it seven times this morning.
Right. Never let anyone forget. But I do think that it's complicated, very complicated, because... I don't think the prosecution did a particularly good mm-hmm. job. So that we have these two planes. We have the plane of, the political plane. People are saying, as Libby just did, that, you know, walking while black, mm-hmm. Becomes a crime to go get some Skittles, which is apparently where he was going. One guy had a gun. The other person did not. But the prosecution needed evidence in order to convict him. And I've been following it, not as closely as I should, but it didn't seem as if they were doing a very good job of persuading a jury. Now, it's interesting because it was an all-female jury, number one. Number two, so both sides must have decided during the voir dire that's what they wanted for some reason. There were no black people on the jury. And that, of course, is a terrible thing in a case like this. But I keep going back in my mind to the O.J. Verdict, in which, you know, O.J., according to many of us, was as guilty as sin,
mm-hmm.
you know, but he got off.
And his behavior has proved that over time.
Right,
yes,
right. Well, also, the other thing that...
is in prison.
Right. The other thing that was proven over the time is these things will catch up with you,
yes.
You know, one way or another. I mean, I wouldn't want to be Mr. Zimmerman right now. That is for darn sure. According to our prevailing sense of what justice, the justice system is, you go before a jury, the jury looks at the evidence and then comes out with it, but they don't look at the sociology.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the point.
Yeah, probably.
I was interested, you brought it up, Alan, and it was brought up throughout when I was watching all of the coverage on Saturday night when the verdict came down, and no matter what network you went to, it was repeated over and over and over again that this was an all-female jury. And I was curious as to why, first of all, how rare that is, number one, but number two, as to what role that ultimately played. Some were saying, well, a jury of your peers should include someone of your own sex if you're being tried for murder. I don't know how that works out or what input it has. It seemed to me that it had more of an effect by where the jury was, that the case was moved to a more affluent white community than where the crime took place.
Yeah, that's true, and that's one thing, and I think that it makes a lot of sense. In terms of, but also that there were no African Americans on the jury.
Right.
That, I think, is far more relevant than anything else that you could say, in this thing. Clearly, if you try to get inside the minds of both the defense and the prosecution, both of them thought they would do better if it was a woman jury.
Right. I think it was the mom factor.
Yeah.
Trayvon Martin's mom sitting there crying, testifying, crying. Zimmerman's mom. I think that was part of what they were going for was the mom factor and that sense of more compassion in this situation than you would get if it was a mixed jury of sex, at any rate. And I think the fact that it was an all-white jury, speaks to Florida's commitment. Or non-commitment, and I know that the Justice Department has taken a look, and maybe they will reopen the case.
Now that's interesting because if you listen to the excellent story that NPR did this morning, and there, people have been calling all the people in Justice Department. Sounds to me, for both political reasons and justice reasons, they don't want to do it. Now, they'll have to make noises as if they're going to do it. They're going to have to say, we're interviewing, because they've already interviewed, apparently, everybody. And they'll have to go around and they'll have to interview everybody again. But, you have an African-American president of the United States. You have an African-American head of the Justice Department. And the last thing these folks want is the concept of a witch hunt done by black people in order to get even. I mean, if there's one thing that the president has talked about in post-racial, so with quotes around it, post-racial America, is that you don't want that divide. My bet is that they won't bring that second set of charges, although I think a lot of that, as it was with the indictment of Zimmerman, is going to depend on what people are saying, what they feel their various constituencies are demanding.
This may seem like an overly cynical statement. However, I did, and maybe I'm reading way too much into it, but it did seem on Sunday morning, on the Sunday morning news shows, and even in the print accounts, that there was a twinge of regret on behalf of the news media that there was not more violent protesting and debate throughout. They seemed almost disappointed, crestfallen in some cases.
you may be right, but I really don't know about that. I really don't know about that. I mean, I do know.
I mean, they were waiting, they had cameras and they were waiting in public parks and they had people there and they said, well, there's really nobody here.
I mean, I will never forget the time around the death of M.L. King, of Dr. King.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the city's burned. No, because there was a sense. Now, I don't know what it means. Maybe we've moved beyond that kind of reaction. You have the president of the United States saying, please don't do it. Please keep calm. But it may also be that these were not the same cases by any means. This was, but I mean, if you happen to be African American in America now, I think the terrible thing here is that you're painfully aware of what the dual justice system is like, and so I can't extrapolate from that why there hasn't been more acting out based on this.
And certainly, I don't mean to portray it that there were not protests. There certainly were.
Yeah.
There were very
Times
peaceful
Square,
protests.
Yeah. But the streets
and
weren't
wonderful.
Boring.
Right. But they were not. They were not. They were not violent. They were. Right. They were calm. They were. They were reasoned. And for the most part. And,
right.
And I think that was perhaps a more violent reaction was expected, which in and of itself seems to me to be a bit racist in its very nature.
Yes, yes, I agree
with you.
That we
expect that.
I agree with you. And it would be interesting to find out, you know, if we brought somebody who is African-American, a leader of the African-American community, in to talk about this at some point, you know, because I think that, you know, we're all white guys here.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a white girl, but, you know, we're all white. We all come from that perspective. We all have our own racist stuff because that's how we were raised. And we try to educate ourselves and we try to correct ourselves. But we don't know what it's like to walk while black, drive while black, and we don't know what it's like to walk in those shoes. And I think it would be good to hear from some folks who do know what it's like. I mean, you know, a few years ago, we had an incident in my front yard where the cops from Troy were chasing some two young black kids onto our front lawn and beat the living daylights out of them. And part of it was because they were driving while black. Part of it was because that they were, quote unquote, wanted for some stuff. But the treatment was astounding. I mean,
Rodney
it
King.
Was just, yes, it was just disgusting. And I'll forever have some of those images in my head because of
saw the whole thing.
What happened. Oh, yeah, we saw the whole thing. And I turned around and dug into my pocket and called Rex at home to make sure the story
Rex Smith
of
the Times Union.
Yeah. So, but, it, you know, it, part of it was because if they those were two white kids, I don't think it would have turned out the way it did. But these were two black kids.
And also, I think that it's when you look at the president calling for calm. I was curious, Alan, in your thoughts of, I mean, there are issues that as president you can control. There's a lot that you can control, but when something like this becomes a political issue, obviously, this issue is in the hands of that jury, and you don't know what's going to happen, and then it suddenly falls into your lap as something that you have to deal with.
I think anybody who was watching that trial had a pretty good idea of what was going to happen. I sure did. There are people who say they were amazed by the outcome. But you judge, if you were sitting in that jury and you judged based on the evidence that the prosecution was able to put together. No, I think you have Nelson Mandela, you know, in South Africa calling for reconciliation. And you have a president of the United States here who's saying this isn't going to help if there's a lot of chaos that comes out of this. And I think these people are very influential. I think they're listened to.
I think the clergy, too. I think the black clergy, there was no call to arms, no call to the street. It's about recognizing, yes, that there are injustices here, but there are ways to work it within the system. And what good is it going to do for us to go out into the streets and burn up, you know, the neighborhoods? We're just hurting ourselves.
Well, the electoral system becomes very important here. In other words, what is the post-decision activity on the part of, you know, African-Americans, for example, in Florida, going to be? We saw an election, hanging chads and the rest of it, in which, to put it mildly, Casey might have said it, we was robbed.
Mm-hmm.
Or people, that's not Alan speaking, but other people saying we was robbed. And as a result of that, you know, you don't hear about Catherine Harris anymore in Florida. Yeah, right. You don't hear about Catherine Harris anymore. And you don't hear about, because I think these things sometimes represent turning points, times that, you know, people's thinking changes. For example, who would have thunk it in this year, 2013, that gay Americans would enjoy large support of the people when they were objects of, all kinds of prejudice and everything just a few short years ago. And then all of a sudden, something gets into the collective consciousness and we say, no, it ain't fair. It's not right. And we make a change. I think when you have a case like this, which clearly, while the jury may not have been given by the prosecution what they needed to hear in order to find a guilty verdict, I think that when we talk about walking while black or going for Skittles or, you know, and getting killed as a result of it, or we hear that one guy had a gun and the other guy did not have a weapon, and yet the hothead who had the gun shot the other guy, a little bit much for me. I don't know. I mean, that's where I'm thinking.
Well, you know, part of it is when you take the gay stuff and you take the African-American stuff, the African-American issues are still the other for the sure. bulk of the society, and we're that's slowly changing with demographics. But you know, we don't. When you talk about gay issues, it touches just about everybody now, because the more people who come out, the more you know, people become more accepting, and people go to the weddings. I went to a wedding this weekend, and it was all sure. very lovely, you know. And we're not so much the other, but race in this country is still divided. That way.
Do you think that that's fascinating, Libby? Do you think that it has to do with gays who are not black? You know, I mean, certainly there are gay people who are black.
Sure.
But when you look at the issue, racism trumps, you know, homophobia.
Well, you know, there's plenty of racism in the gay community, you know.
What do you mean?
Oh, there's plenty of racism in the gay community, is what I mean.
You mean some people who are gay are also
sure.
racist?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And some people who are gay are classist, and, you know, some are still misogynist and the rest of it. And so, you know, I think for the large majority of voting America, it's sort of easier to embrace the neighbor who's gay than it is to embrace the neighbor who's black. Mm. And we all live, I mean, you know, I live where I live, there's one black family, one Indian family, that's it. Mm-hmm. Everybody else is white. Yeah. You know, you come into the city of Albany, it's still pretty segregated. You know, so that's part of what we're dealing with. And you know, walking while black to buy Skittles is not a crime.
It's so extraordinary mm-hmm. that this prejudice is based on how much skin pigmentation
right.
somebody has.
Right.
It's that stupid.
It is that stupid. And it's that simple, too.
It is also, I found it interesting in the, again, in the coverage of this, where we talked a lot. There was a lot of talk about racism. There was a lot of talk about where just as we've been discussing this morning, mm-hmm. Where this country is in the issue of race as a result of this verdict. Less so about the issue of guns. And I was interested that in the president's remarks, he said we should ask ourselves if we're doing all we can to stem the tide of gun violence that claims too many lives across this country on a daily basis. And to me, that is one of the things that is sort of getting lost in here mm-hmm. because of the mm-hmm. other debate.
One of the things that I saw in one of the tabs this morning, I think the good tab, the news compared to the bad tab, but you know what it is. I think there was, and I may be wrong about this, where it came from, but they showed this very scary advanced gun that Zimmerman had used, and that it as the trial ended, two things happened. Number one, they took the electronic bracelet off his leg, and number two, they handed him back his gun.
Wow, that is scary. Yeah.
And symbolically, I think that was it was just extraordinary. You know, I guess it was Roselle, my wife, who wanted to know whether or not, I think it was she, who said, is he going to be taken off patrol because he was told by the police to cut it out, to go away, and he didn't do it, which makes him a hothead, I suspect. So the question is, does he then lose at least his job on there or not? And I have a feeling the answer is going to probably be not.
Well, I think he thinks he's going to end up on Fox News is what I've been reading.
Is that right? You mean as a regular commentator?
As a commentator, which, you know, just goes to show, but nonetheless. But,
go ahead.
The only thing I want to talk about is in terms of the guns and race. If the verdict had gone the other way.
Yes.
Okay. The discussion would be much more focused on guns and would be much more focused on, you see, we're not necessarily post-racial, but we're getting there.
Yeah.
You know, and this is now, and this coupled with the Voting Rights Act thing is really a major blow. And I think that it's taken, you know, equality for people of color in this country back.
I don't think so. I think my hope, Libby, is that when people see injustice, they know it. And that it advances the argument.
Well, with any luck, people will go out and do the voter reg and get registered vote.
Except that, interesting, as the other piece of news today, maybe I'm jumping the gun with Joe here because he controls the agenda, but the other...
Oh, really?
Yeah. is the Pennsylvania voter
yes.
ID law.
Oh.
You know, which comes out now, and we know what that's all about. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're, you know, as the old Pete Seeger song goes, if you're black, Bill Big Brunsey, if you're black, step back. And you have to show, you know, stuff that we know African Americans have less of because of poverty and other things mm-hmm. than the rest of the folks do. So you see it maybe in a verdict on a murder trial, but you also see it coming out in many other different directions.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back after NPR News and talk about all kinds of issues, including that one and some other good ones as well. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our Facebook page or our webpage or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue along with Ray Graff, Alan Chartok, and our guest Libby Post, who joins us. And we welcome your input as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. We have other issues to talk about. We did get a note from a listener, Norman, who writes, "Why didn't Stand Your Ground apply to Trayvon Martin, who was being stalked by a man with a gun?" And from what I understand about the case, Zimmerman did not ultimately use the Stand Your Ground defense, which was his choice, and that of his defense team. Sanford police did not arrest him until almost 2 months after the shooting because of the Florida Stand Your Ground rules that require police to have specific evidence to refute a self-defense claim in order to arrest someone claiming self-defense. So a provision of the law that is, by all accounts, many call vague. So I think we'll go with maybe that as a reason that it still remains to be vague.
Well, I think there may have been some tongue-in-cheek from Norman, understanding that it's a double standard. And I think that's his point.
Let us go to some other issues and what I find to be a fascinating issue. Activists organized the first national gay blood drive on Friday in an effort to combat the Food and Drug Administration's ban on blood donations from gay and bisexual men. The FDA banned donations from men who have had sex with other men since 1977, saying there is an increased risk of exposure to and transmission of infectious diseases, including HIV, and male-to-male sexual encounters. The FDA uses multiple layers of safeguards in its approach to ensuring blood safety. According to the agency's website, the FDA screens all potential blood donors based on risk factors and signs of infections. So the question, I guess, Libby, is why now should it be turned around?
Well, it's time because the preponderance of new cases of HIV is no longer in the gay men's community. And so if you're going to say gay men can't give blood, well, then you have to look at the other demographic communities where there's a preponderance of AIDS and say you can't do it either.
Well, some of those, for example, would be, drug users, intravenous drug users. I don't know anything about this, but that has never stopped me before. But I'm betting that intravenous drug users aren't allowed to give blood either.
No, but you know, it's among the African American community. It's a growing problem, and you know, there's not a sign up that says no. You know, you can't give. This comes out of the hysteria. And the marginalization of gay men in the late 70s, early 80s, 90s, when HIV became,
sure,
people started actually dealing with it as an issue and as a disease. And, you know, you can do instant HIV tests now. So, you know.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. You can get your, it's instant. So you go, if you're a gay man, you take the HIV test. If it's negative, you know, you give blood. And then they do all sorts of things with the blood. But, you know, the thing is this. The Red Cross says it's time for this to go. All the major blood donor organizations says it's time for this ban to go.
Because their numbers are down. I mean, they're 10% of the number of blood donors are down. So they're looking for all the help they can get.
So they're down 10% or down to 10% of what they used to be?
Down 10.
No, they're down 10% just in this in the first 6 months of this year alone.
Right.
Wonder why.
Well, because people don't want to go and expose themselves to rejection, I suspect, for one reason or another, either herpes or this or that, you know, I mean, in which they just are, you know, it's just one more reason not to go. The good reason to go is because we need the blood, and and it's the right thing to do.
It is the right thing to do.
And I think it's always down in the summer months as, you know, people are busy and so forth, and that should be noted as well. But the ban is not discriminatory or based on any judgment concerning a donor's sexual orientation, according to the FDA. On their website, the policy statement is based on the documented increased risk of transmissible infections.
Well, I don't know. There's a guy from William Kobler, who's an AMA board member, is saying that the ban is discriminating and not based on sound science. You know, and the Red Cross, the America's Blood Centers, you know, an international nonprofit that represents all the blood donor groups. I mean, it's time. It's just time for us to get over ourselves. Because, you know, there are so many blood-borne diseases that are screened and, you know, you're not allowed to give or they don't let the blood be used. You know, the incidence of AIDS among gay men is dropping. And so it's time for us to recognize
that. Well, I'm impressed by your point that if you can really have them do as one would do with a diabetic glucose test, you know, a pinprick, and then tell you whether or not, you know, you have HIV, if that's what you want to know. I remember all the precautions.
Oh, right.
They were afraid people were going to commit suicide and you had to be counseled and all the rest of it in the beginning. But if you're able to go and say, okay, I'm willing to take that risk, you know, go ahead, give me the pinprick and tell me whether or not I have this. And if I don't, I should be allowed to give blood. It seems to me that's pretty straightforward.
And again, the blood is tested before it goes
anywhere.
For anything.
Right.
Yeah, if you have C or whatever else,
anything.
You know,
it's being tested. I have to say, I have incredible ignorance in this matter. When I was talking to a gay friend, this was maybe about a year ago, and it was after like Sandy or something, and there was an increased talk about blood, and I said, I'm going to go to the blood drive. Do you want to come? And he said, well, I can't. And I said, really? And why can't you? And he said, because I'm gay. And I said, what? And I was stunned. Like, I had no idea that was even. Now, obviously, I knew that, you know, they would perhaps ask about your history and then they would also test the blood. That made sense to me. But the fact that you had, and then when I was told that it was a lifetime ban, I was like, whoa.
Right. And you're a man who has sex with another man. It's the same man for the last 25 years because you're in a committed relationship and both of you were negative. Come on.
Yeah.
You know, it's part of all of this notion of men who have sex with men, and that this is why it's also rooted in this notion that the promiscuity among the gay male community is going to put everybody at risk. And that's not the case. It's not the way everybody
heterosexuals
is.
Heterosexuals are
just as promiscuous.
If not more.
Right, right. So, I mean, come on. You know, it's time for this to drop and to let people give blood if they want to give blood, and then it's all gets tested, and that's that.
Do you think we'll see a change
relatively
soon?
Well, you know, this administration has, by and large, been pretty good, and Catherine Sebelius is a little more with it around our issues. So I'm hoping, yes, we'll see this be dropped. But again, it'll be turned into a political issue, and you'll see our friends in the House go wild about it. And, you know, who knows how far they want to go on this. You know, do they want this as an issue? There's so many other things, you know. People are really pushing for the non-discrimination bill on the federal level now. They're really pushing for the president to do an executive order to ban discrimination in federal government and in contracts and all that sort of stuff. So whether or not this is an issue they really want to take on,
you got to pick your fights.
Yeah.
But it is interesting, Libby, that both Joe and I, until Joe forwarded this article this morning, really didn't know about this.
Right. Yeah.
It's not that we shouldn't have known about it. We should have. But we didn't. And I suspect a lot of people who are listening to the radio right now, if they're being honest with themselves, saying, yeah, you know, I didn't know either. It seems so silly. Once people start to get that perspective, I think, you know, change is inevitable.
Well, you know, same thing with marriage. I mean, you know, it's the same thing. Once people get the perspective that recognize, you know, we're talking about people you love, your neighbors, your friends, your family, they get it.
We are going to take a break. We will be back and continue our conversation and discuss a few more issues before the end of the hour. We welcome your input as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarry and fabrication, used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, ashfieldstone.com. Medical Associates of the Hudson Valley, Kingston, physicians providing health care in primary care, rheumatology, geriatrics, and more, in-office and hospital care, 845-338-7140. Kentco Work and Play Outfitters, Route 28, Kingston, presenting the third Catskill Mountain Archery Festival with competitions, demonstrations, and more for compound and traditional archers, July 20th, atkenco.com.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue. Libby Post is here. Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, and we welcome you as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan talked about this earlier, and we touched on it, but as we've been hearing this morning on NPR, Pennsylvania's voter ID law will be back in the state court today. After more than a year of legal limbo, a state judge will decide whether the 2012 law, which has not been enforced, violates the state's constitution. The measure requires voters to show a particular state-issued ID before casting ballots. Last week, civil rights advocates like the NAACP railed against the requirement. And I guess the question that I have is, if I can go to New York and sign in the book and my signatures match and that's good enough, why isn't that good enough in Pennsylvania?
That's a really good question.
Well, of course, we know the answer. I mean, we know the answer. The more of this kind of thing you do, look, we used to have poll taxes. We used to have people having to take tests about what was in the Constitution of the United States or the history of the of the United States. This is just more of the same.
It's more Jim Crow, but in a different different garb.
Look, we know what it is, and your point is extremely well taken, Joe, which is that we have that protection by matching up the signatures. But state legislatures get taken over by one group or another, and then they, in order to enhance their electoral possibilities, they do what they have to do, or they think they have to do. And the Republicans, certainly, as Libby just said, our friends in the House, have been doing a lot of that.
You do it, and then you say, okay, but don't get upset at us because we're not going to enforce it.
Yeah, well, this is the big boogeyman. This is the new boogeyman, voter fraud. And we all know, I mean, the numbers bear it out, that it hardly ever happens.
Yeah.
There's hardly ever voter fraud. And
big problem is not enough people are coming out
right,
of it.
That's right, right. So what's the issue here? One would want more people to come out to vote, but what Alan said is true. They're trying to suppress votes in communities that wouldn't vote for the party in power.
Ah, but here's the problem. And there is a problem here. If people don't really understand, for example, what Joe just said, that you match up the signature and it's there, if they say, wait a second now. What's so wrong with, you know, what they try to do is to pick things that have a patina of rationality to them. And so a lot of people say, well, what's so wrong with that? Well, there's nothing wrong with showing your driver's license or showing something else. We don't see there's anything wrong with that. And therefore, it becomes one of those issues which is hard to fight. However, I do believe that the folks on that Pennsylvania Supreme Court know exactly what they're dealing with here. And I wouldn't be one bit surprised to see that when it finally, if it passes and if it goes all the way, if the lower court decides in their favor, because it's been thrown back once already, that no, this is discriminatory and we're not going to allow it here.
Well, that would be a really good thing. I mean, you know, we know voter fraud here in Albany County. You know, and there's plenty of ways to vote for dead people and all that sort of stuff and vote early and often and all that. But that's really a relic of the past. And we've seen it here. And, you know, having to show your ID or the state-sponsored ID, which means it's not just your license.
You have to go back and get something else. No, that's much harder.
You know, you got to get something new. And so people who aren't used to dealing with the system or find that that dealing with any kind of bureaucracy to be totally overwhelming because that's the way it's set up.
Sure.
You know, aren't going to get those cards and they're going to be disenfranchised. And, you know, if you can vote that way in New York, where we've had our slew of electoral problems,
right,
we should be able to vote that way anywhere. Sign the book, and that's all you have to do.
And also, I mean, yes, let us not hold up New York as the gold standard
as far as
I think Ray's going to say something now.
Well, you know, if what you say is true that we've had these troubles in New York, then isn't that an example that maybe New York's sign and go ahead is not perhaps the best way to roll?
No, I think that, you know, when you look at voter fraud issues across the country, it's negligible. You know, they keep the Republicans in the House and the Republicans in the Senate and the people who want to do this keep chatting about voter fraud, you know, because they don't want certain demographics to be voting.
Well, that's right.
And that's really what it comes down to.
Well, that's right. Libby, I think Ray makes a point that you're talking about voter fraud in Albany probably wasn't terribly helpful to the general thrust of your argument.
Except for the fact, to a little color commentary.
We've
all lived through this.
And
look, we no longer have that kind of voter fraud in Albany.
You know,
I mean, things have changed. In every other part of the state, people vote. People get elected. It's a signature. You go through the process of registering to vote. That should be enough.
Look, we all know Pennsylvania's border with Mexico is huge.
I thought it was Canada, actually.
Oh, really? Okay,
yes.
It could be both.
No, although Ray's point is well taken, because I think one of the demographics they are obviously after here are Hispanic voters.
Mm-hmm.
And we know what that did to them in the last election.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, they had a big chunk taken out of their posterior. Because they had guessed wrong on Hispanics. I mean, that's what I love about this country. You get Lou Dobbs on whatever he was on, you know, and he's screaming and he's yelling, and all of a sudden there's a retreat because it looks like, you know, people are buying the Lou Dobbs argument on immigration, for example. And then all of a sudden you have an election and now you have Republicans doing soul searching about, are we going to be the party of everybody,
right,
or are we just going to be the party of the Tea Party?
You have Paul Ryan embracing the immigration bill. I mean, you know, it's like, I could say something colorful, but we're on radio.
Oh, so. Please, please do.
Clean it up a little. Clean it up a little.
8 second delay. Go right ahead.
Well, you know, I find interesting when it comes to, you know, how we vote is that, and this was, I was reminded of this several years ago when the New York Times spent billions of dollars to come up with a new facility and a new communication system so they could get the news from one place to another, and they could all satellites, and they put in all this stuff. And somebody said, you know, that's great, it's $30 billion, but in the end it comes down to a 10-year-old on a bike. You know, and it's still the same thing here where you can go through all this stuff with laws and litigations, but it still comes down to that volunteer who is standing there with a book of whether they're going to let you go in that booth or not.
Yeah.
And that's really part of the part of the problem too, of A, who's putting them there and what they're doing there. And so it can be different in Albany County than it can be in Columbia County or Dutchess County or in Berkshire County.
I know the ladies when I go in there. They're always looking at me saying,
check his license.
They know who I
am. They know who I am. You're a looking guy.
Yeah. My favorite story about that is I'm going into the Democratic convention years ago, and in front of me is Bella Abzug. And the cops say to her, who are you? And she got really angry. She said, you know damn well who I am.
Well, I just want to give a shout out to the people at the Board of Elections, not just here, but I deal with the board people all over the state for the library votes.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, I have to say that all of them are really there for making sure people vote. You know, and they really are committed to the process of
voting.
And
that it's fair.
And
that
it's fair, and that people like me don't, you know, look to see what's going on, you know. But they really want it to be fair, and they want it to be well-run because they're the ones who are doing it.
That is true, except that it doesn't include everybody. In other words, there are people who don't want to be fair around, and those are the people who we see sometimes coming. I mean, I love the Great Barrington people. You're right, but obviously the people who are putting this kind of stonewall up are doing it for a reason.
Oh, absolutely.
Is this a reaction to Philadelphia, which has had some real questionable voting and some strange things going on in past elections? I mean, some real serious questions about people voting and voting often in strong party areas of Philadelphia. Is this a reaction to that? Is that what the background is of this?
A legal challenge to Pennsylvania's law was filed by the American Civil Liberties Union with 93-year-old Viviette Applewhite as the lead plaintiff. She's a longtime voter born in Philadelphia who wouldn't be able to get the ID she would need under new rules because she doesn't have a birth certificate or other key identifying documents such as a non-driving license. So that is what brought this particular case before the court.
But I think we all acknowledge that there have been problems in the past. I knew a congressman once who used to brag about walking around money.
Oh, yeah.
He would give a lot of they go big
$5
roll of cash.
Bills,
go walking around money. Go and go and vote, will you please? I don't think people voted who couldn't vote.
That's the thing.
Yeah,
right. You give somebody the $5 bill, they go and vote once. You know, whether it's ethical to give them the $5 bill is another story.
Well, we know the answer to that.
Right, but they go vote. Yeah. Right, and it's just one time. This voter ID stuff did not come out of just Pennsylvania. It's been more out of the South and the Midwest where we
have
much
more. No, I understand the different
more,
states. I'm
you know,
talking about this particular one.
Yeah, no, you make a good point. It's always right. And we always encourage you to do
yeah.
All right. And that note, we are out of time, but we always want to thank everyone for participating. We would love for you to do so. It's roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage, on our Facebook page, and tweet by going to @WAMC Roundtable, @WAMC Roundtable. Ray Graff, Alan Chartok, and Libby Post, thank you very much. When are we on a normal schedule?
No. I'm in Minnesota and Michigan and Colorado.
And then Libby will be back.
She'll be back.
Okay. We're going to have a regular Monday schedule, and then she'll be back in August.
All right.
Excellent. This is sort of a tease, I believe, as you put it.
Yes, that's right.
Excellent. We look forward to your next appearance.
Right, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. We have more Roundtable coming up. You're listening to the program on WAMC.